everybody. Patrick Connor here, and welcome back to Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio. I'm here with my boy Aris Pina. We're here to talk some boxing. We had a Canelo fight weekend in Texas this past weekend, and I mean, it's a Canelo post-Canelo fight weekend. We got to go. You know, we got to talk about it, right?
Absolutely. It was a big fight weekend. It broke the indoor attendance record for bar boxing match. Canelo scored a very convincing victory that stirred a lot of emotions afterwards. So,
yeah, you know, he look, I got two kids, so Billy Joe Saunders indeed proved that his pullout game is stronger than mine. So I'm sorry, I got to make the jokes for the children's for all the people listening. Yeah. Nah, it's look, dude, all of the talk's still fresh. It's just Monday that we're doing this, and you know, I'll have this up as soon as I possibly can. But the talk is still pretty fresh about what happened, and the conversation's largely centered around whether or not quitting is okay, whether that was quitting, you know, the definition of blah, 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 and all these historical examples. And we've kind of gone a little bit away from the focus of Canelo and the victory and all that type of stuff, but nonetheless, it was big. And needless to say, like you and I were just talking about before we started recording, man, Billy Joe Saunders' face is an absolute mess. I don't know if he already had his operation, but sounds like it's going to be necessary, and we don't even know what's going to happen.
I mean, look, any eye injury is really scary injury, but if you break your socket in, what was it, four different places that they called it, quadrupod or something?
It was whatever it was, that shit was fucked up.
It was very bad, exactly. And to have your eye shattered, you know, your eye socket shattered in four different places, a lot of us can say, oh yeah, you know, I'll continue, whatever it may be. The man's eye turned into an eggplant colored and swelled up immediately shut the second that happened. Like, his demeanor, which was very confident because he was doing pretty good the previous round, a couple of rounds before that, completely changed. He was in clear pain, and he just went in full retreat mode. Canelo, you know, noticed his body language change immediately when he landed that, because I'm sure he felt the punch reverberate through his arm after he landed it. It was a beautiful shot. And Billy Joe retreated from there, and Canelo, as you saw, he was raising his arms to, like, you know, get the adrenaline from the crowd going even more because he sensed the end was near. I mean, that was the type of punch that's going to end of a fight. That's going to end a fight. And no matter what he was saying before the fight, oh, I'd go out there and break my face, I'd do this, I would rather die in the ring and everything. The set of the reality is, once the pain sets in, once the injury actually happens, everything changes. And you can't fault him or his corner for pulling out that next, you know, for not coming out that next round. That is an intense injury. He's going to be out for a long, long time if he's even able to come back from this. Like, this is an injury that is going to affect him for the rest of his career, if not his life, you know?
Yeah, I said it on Twitter, and, you know, I'll say it again just because it's a readily accessible example, something that people will remember because it happened fairly recently. But Kell Brook, he had a very similar kind of injury where he had a fracture on his eye socket, and basically that changed his career, changed his life. There's now, every single time he gets into the ring, there's a question of, is his eye going to hold up? How is his eye going to be? And similarly, I guess you could say for Errol Spence, every time he gets into the ring, people are now going to be questioning, oh, that car wreck, that shit was bad. You know, his face is scarred up. This happened, that happened. Is it, what's going to happen when he gets hit? It's fair to ask. And so, yeah, man, there's a lot of hyperbole when it comes to boxing about going out on your shield. And I also want to say that, look, you don't have to say anything. Like, you don't have to agree or disagree. I don't want to put you on the spot with your opinion on it, but I'll just say it because I've said it publicly anyway, so who gives a fuck? DAZN's commentating crew is easily, consistently the worst in boxing. It's not good. I don't mind jokey, obviously, because I'm always jokey on the show, and I'm always jokey everywhere, but it's like bad jokes. It's like inside jokes that nobody else understands or will get an entire broadcast. And then, like inappropriate commentary, or like commentary that's like bordering on inappropriate. Like, for instance, continuing to push this narrative that Billy Joe Saunders should have gone out on his shield. No, he should not have. And I'll just kind of try to really, really briefly, I mean, I'm not trying to be a dick with this, but try to explain what the deal is with these kinds of eye injuries, where you're looking at like an Eric Morales situation where he has this massive puffiness on his eye, or like Ebony Bridges, where she had a massive puffed up eye. It's a different kind of injury, where a different kind of swelling, and what's causing that swelling with their eye is edema. It's fluid. And so usually blood. And then when you have a fracture in your eye socket, that's not the kind of injury that's necessarily going to be, as they say, edematous or cause edema. So you might not see that kind of swelling. And on top of that, in that area of your eye, you have a lot of nerves, and you can have permanent nerve damage and permanent eye damage. You could lose your eye. You know, you could literally bust open your eye, and that might not necessarily mean the end of your eye, because sometimes it can heal from that. But well, do you want to fucking test that? Come on now. No, of course not. You know, he's like 31 or something like that. He's not even an old guy. It's a little ridiculous to expect that of somebody. And then the secondary question of that is like, who the fuck is anybody to demand that from him? That's preposterous. It's absurd. So, you know, it's one thing to say, well, I expect somebody to fight hard or give it their all. I didn't really see something else from Billy Joe Saunders. I saw him give a pretty good effort. And a lot of people will mock that and say, oh, well, that's what they say about the British fighters when they lose. Whatever. I saw him give a pretty good effort. And I don't think there was anything not respectable about what he did in the ring, obviously. But, man, you got to fucking quit after an injury like that. That's ridiculous. So, that could be definitely career-changing for the guy. No question. And, again, I think just pushing.
That was like using Margarito as an example, saying, well, you know, Margarito went the distance with Pacquiao. That basically ended him and his career as well, didn't it?
Well, it basically did.
I mean, he came back, and had those fights, everything. But more or less, as a top fighter in anything, in remotely a good fight, like, that ended it. Well, look at his eye now.
Yeah, and they're on top of that. There are a number of counterpoints to that. Like the first and most obvious being that he basically lost that eye. That eye doesn't really work anymore, and there's no hope that there's no hope for his eye, and nothing's going to like get better for his eye or for him at this point. You know, and on top of that,
I just have a visual of that eye looking at me now.
He looks frightening now. Mm-hmm. He looked crazy. And I mean, and so like there's that, but then on top of that, it's like he himself has said, regardless of what you feel about Antonio Margarito, he himself has said he wished he hadn't done that. He wished he hadn't gone forward and, just sucked it up in that fight. And what's even crazier is in the middle of that goddamn round, Manny Pacquiao is like, hey, Lawrence Cole. That was who the referee was, fucking Lawrence Cole. And he goes, hey, Lawrence Cole, are you about to stop this shit? And Lawrence Cole's like, carry on, whatever. I mean, dude, you know, this entire – that using Antonio Margarito is literally like one of the worst possible examples you could use to boost your fucking argument here. It's just dumb. It makes you look real stupid if you used Antonio Margarito.
Yeah, it's so, congratulations that he went the distance, you know what I mean? Perfect. But it's like I can – it's injuries like that are just, they could be like, it's a thing now. We're not even sure the extent of how bad it still was, because all we know is that he went into surgery. He stood overnight. He might still be in the hospital recuperating. I'm sure if he was flown home, they would have reported it already. So,
even just the risk of that injury, I'm fine with that too. I'm totally good with that. And so, I mean,
and
I
he
guess
put up a commendable performance before, before that.
Well, I guess I'll ask you, what did you think was going to happen? And I don't want to, like, you know, I already know.
No.
We talked about it, but.
Yeah, I thought that Canelo would have some issues. I don't know if it would be. I thought it would be more earlier than the fight, as he would be adjusting, as opposed to, like, during the middle rounds when Saunders started skidding around and, like, kind of, you know, settled down. It looked like he had jitters early on. You know, it was a huge, this was the biggest stage he was ever on. And for all his bluster, you know, he was fighting the best fighter in the world. And he wasn't outright losing or getting blown out. But, I mean, he wasn't, you know, he was being more active than Canelo. But Canelo was landing the more, you know, telling blows in the first few rounds. And then Saunders started settling down. It seemed like he got, you know, rose to the – he was like, okay, he got more settled with the situation, got more aware of everything, and then started, you know, getting more into a rhythm. And as he did that, Canelo did have some problems in there. And also a guy that like Alvarez, who's not very active, is not like, you know, a person who throws a bunch of punches in a round as opposed to what he usually does is, you know, look for more accuracy and land punches that are going to count. He was out-hustled and lost a couple of them. So Saunders had momentum going into the round where his face got broken.
I kind of agree, yeah. I pretty much agree on all that. And you and I talked about it beforehand. I thought that what would probably happen would be that Canelo would likely have issues with Saunders' movement, footwork, and not that he's particularly skilled or, you know, anything like that per se, but he's definitely very awkward, very tricky. He does not
have... He's a good fighter. He's not, yeah, he doesn't have a lot of power. No.
Yeah, he's not some, like, a lot of power or something.
But he's a split guy who's fought his entire life, and he's a confident fighter as well. So.
Yep. Yeah. So I knew that there was definitely a real possibility... but I was with you. Yeah, I thought that what would happen would be, it would be early on that Canelo had more issues and that as the fight went on, he would adjust a little bit more. And that it seemed like knocked off by about two or three rounds for me. I figured by about the halfway point would be when Canelo really would get him figured out. But it seemed like it took a few rounds after that. But it was like once he figured him out, he had zero interest in the fight continuing on. He wanted to end it. And, yeah, I do have to give Saunders credit because for about two to three rounds, it seemed as though he clearly understood what he needed to do if he wanted to win the fight and where he needed to keep Canelo. But it also, to me, and I'm not trying to, like, make excuses or anything like that, but it almost seemed to me like Canelo was, like, just sizing him up. Like, biding his time, he never looked to me like he was out of control of the fight. Like, he was like, oh, shit. He was more kind of just like, you know, slowly inching toward him. Because
that's once, what he does in every fight.
Yep. Yeah. And once he found his range, it was like, all right, motherfucker, game on. And that's what happened. You know. Yeah. I guess... The other question I was going to ask, I'm almost reluctant to get much into this just because it's such a pit of despair and black hole conversation. But nonetheless, it is part of the conversation, I think, especially from a number of British fight fans and writers who definitely want to bring up Canelo's previous issues with performance-enhancing drug tests and suggesting that the fact that he broke a dude's eye socket means that, you know, that's extra ammo or extra evidence that he is not a clean fighter. Yeah, I mean, what's your opinion of that? I'm not going to force you to take a stance.
No. So what do you know what I think that Canelo is on something?
Yeah, like, do you think that it's... Or, I mean, I guess it doesn't even need to be...
I mean, honestly, I think with that drug test, what they said it was, it was probably tainted meat or whatever was going on in Mexico. That's all that was. And for a guy that as he is, he's still young, and he was like when he first came on the scene. All right, it wasn't any different kind of like than when Pacquiao first came on the scene early on when he was like, I don't know, 112 pounds, but then grew eventually, you know, came over to the States and then just kind of grew from there. But, and then Canelo on his end, he was young when he first came on the scene, like really young when he first fought Cotto's brother. How old was he back then?
Shit,
18, I mean, not even, like 19
yeah, God,
probably
he
must have
been about 18, yeah, something like
or
that.
19, yeah, he was still a teenager when he fought, I think, on that card. Or, you know, so, obviously he was still growing, he was still developing from there, and, you know, he's only around 30 years old now or so. So his body was just growing naturally from there. He's at his absolute peak, treats himself well. He's consistently in the gym. He's always working, perfecting his craft. He's you know, the epitome of what a fighter should be right now. And that's why he's the best in the world. But I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, enhancements or anything like that. I think the one time he got busted, it was literally just because of whatever went on with the beef, as opposed to other guys like Neri or some other people who I think do mess with some, you know, probably were messing with something because of all the times he was busted. But like a guy like Canelo, nah, he even comes off as a person who just, he doesn't give off a vibe that would be into that everything. He's just, you know, a person in his element. He's the top fighter in the world right now, and he just landed the perfect punch. The way he, the velocity of it, the way he threw it, the torque of it, everything about it, it just landed perfectly. Saunders kind of leaned into it.
Yeah, he was leaning into it too. Yeah, he was
leaning into it, exactly. So combine the two things, and you know, you got a broken face from it. You see how those punches sound when he hits, when he hits the bag. It, Saunders' face was the bag that time.
Oh man, it's like there's so many. So I guess I would say, what do I think about the clenbuterol thing? Well, I think that while it's possible that he ate tainted beef on accident, I think it's probably more likely that they were doing something. Regardless, whether they were or not, I think that it's important to note that, number one, as far as the performance-enhancing drug conversation goes, any fighter or athlete, I think it's probably going to be the more money they have, the more likely it is they're doing something that other fighters are, that other fighters without money are simply unable to do. And in a lot of cases, that's going to be chemical. Straight up. It just has to do with what they're able to do. They have personal chefs. They have fucking trainers and conditioners. They have summer homes. They have this. They have that. They have equipment that other people don't have, etc. So I think that it's the more money somebody has, the more likely it is they're doing something. However, the caveat to all of that is that it's only any sort of performance-enhancing drug. And I'm not saying that's what's happening. But any, in any situation, any sort of performance-enhancing drug is going to only be as good as how hard the athlete is willing to work, period.
Sure.
If they're not willing to work that shit, it doesn't mean anything. And so that is such a massive part of why Canelo is successful. And not only successful, but, you know, if not the best fighter in the world, certainly one of the two or three best fighters in the world, but probably the best fighter in the world. He works hard. He stays in the gym. I can't remember the last time seeing him fat or chubby. He's constantly in shape. He's fairly professional. You know, these are things to like about him. So yeah. It's, I don't know, in some ways I almost don't even want to grace it with a whole lot of time because legitimize the conversation. But it's also, like I've said before, boxing and athletes in general, or athletics, you know, sports in general are so rife with performance-enhancing drugs that the testing cannot keep up. It pretty much will never be able to keep up. And that doesn't mean that I don't care or don't want to pay attention. It just means that it's like, I think the conversation's not in the right place about it. You know, all of these like WBC clean programs, like they're pretty much meaningless. So yeah, anyway, it is part of the conversation though, because I've seen it mentioned several different times since the fight has ended. But yeah, I thought it was an entertaining fight. It was a pretty good fight. It had a couple swings and momentum here and there.
More entertaining than I thought it would end up. I thought Saunders was going to be on the move for most of it, and Canelo would just kind of gradually beat him down throughout, you know, on his way to a decision win.
Yeah, I actually was somewhat pleasantly surprised, too. Like, they were, there was, like, some clinching or whatever, but they were, there was some action. It seemed like during the middle rounds, Canelo's output dropped quite a bit, though, and that was partially why I was a little bit worried and was like, oh damn, like what's happening here?
But yeah, his punch output sometimes goes into like, you know, only throw like 28, 20 something punches around at that point. But he makes up for it for accuracy, obviously. Like, you know, the punches he lands, everybody notices because they're so like hard and sharp and whatever. But, you know, Saunders, to his credit, though, was able to outwork Canelo at that point and put leather on him, too. Because if you saw in the press conference when he was going off on Andrade, hilariously, his face was marked up a little bit.
Yeah, one of his eyes was a little bit swollen. And yeah, he looked a little bit marked up.
You get the sense that guy like Canelo, kind of not unlike Triple G, that when he knows a person can't hurt him, he doesn't mind, like, if he's, you know, taking a little bit of a break or whatever, if the guy's going to land a punch or two on him, he's not going to, you know, do his best to get it. Like, he'll just let it happen while he's moving in position to keep, you know, do the business he needs to do. Not like Triple G, where he just walked in and took, like, four shots to the face, clearly walking in, you know, knocking out someone like Dominic Wade, for instance. But, like, if you watch a couple of times, or, you know, Canelo would stand there and Saunders would come in, boom, hit him with a hook, hit him with a left hand, you know, jab him a couple of times, and Alvarez would just kind of stand there and, you know, then go about his business again.
Yeah, he, so kind of like what you were saying earlier, like to circle back and like to kind of two birds, one stone it. You were talking about how Canelo looked earlier in his career and his development. And that's another area where the hard work comes in and where we've clearly seen that he's developed. There are still, for whatever reason, a lot of people, a lot of fans mostly, probably, I guess, the proverbial haters with a Z, that like just are insisting that Canelo has not done shit. Every single one of his wins deserves some sort of asterisk, and that he's basically gaming the system and doesn't deserve this and doesn't deserve that. There are still those people. And why I don't know, because he has easily one of the, you know, best resumes in boxing right now, if not the best resume. But he's clearly developed as a fighter, regardless of what you think of him. Whereas he started out earlier in those kind of like, like you said, against Matthew Hatton or whatever. And, you know, even against Shane Mosley. I remember that was more of a kind of like a slugging match, and it was kind of an entertaining fight too. Like, he went toe to toe with Mosley for stretches, but he was so much quicker.
Well, I remember he fought Lovemore Endo, I think, on HBO Latino. Do you remember that?
I don't specifically remember that. I'm not going to lie to you. I probably watched it, but who knows? It's
the first time I just like thought about that in years, because we're talking about him. I'm just like, wow.
Who knows what I was smoking or drinking at the time? I don't specifically remember it, but yeah, he's in those fights though. He clearly was far more of a kind of boxer puncher, with more emphasis on the puncher, and a little bit more of like a volume thrower. But then we also saw later on in those fights, he was getting a little bit gassed. And so the point being that as he's progressed, just about every issue he's had, they've addressed in the gym. When he seemed to have stamina issues earlier on and was getting wobbled every so often, they worked on his stamina. You know, they allowed him to, even though a lot of us didn't like it, and a lot of us didn't like that he was fighting at Canelo weight and shit like that, and at all these weird kind of catch weights and shit like that, I'm not a fan of it either. But they basically allowed him to do whatever it was he needed to do.
I remember the Canelo weight.
Yeah, shit was kind of whack, but at the same time, they allowed him to do whatever it was he felt comfortable with body-wise, and so he wasn't killing himself to make weight, at least presumably. And he wasn't having visible stamina issues in most of his fights. And now I think that since he's moved up in weight, that's clearly bared out, that he's, you know, he's not having to make weight in the same way, and it's not as big an issue. But just about everything, every issue he's had, they've addressed in one way or another. Whether they've been super successful is, I guess, another story. He still has issues with fighters who are forcing him to lead, and fighters who are kind of like, you know, slicker or more boxers themselves. I don't think he really likes to lead in that way. So Edis Landi Lara type, an Austin Trout type, those kinds of fighters are just, they don't work for him that well. But you also have to say and have to acknowledge that he's fucking fought them. You know, he's fought.
Those he fought them when fighters. He was young.
He fought those kinds of fighters, and he fought some of those fighters when nobody else wanted to fight them. So
I mean, he fought Trout before Mayweather.
You have to give the dude some amount of credit there, you know. So anyway, I think it's important to look at his progression as a fighter, and then to see him in there against Billy Joe Saunders. There were definitely times where he was kind of like walking him down, and he seemed like, all right, I don't really give a shit what you're throwing at me. But there also were times where even in those rounds where Saunders looked more impressive, a number of the punches that he was throwing, Canelo was taking on his shoulders, his gloves.
Of course, because he has some of the best defense in the boxing.
And that's, I think, some of the most impressive progression we've seen from him overall is his defense and his ability to catch and counter. And that's something that, like, a lot of fans and even pundits and writers and shit really take for granted. That's not easy. That's the kind of
thing. No, what he does is really impressive because it's not around that he's not like moving around like a jackrabbit or nothing. He's really just staying in the pocket and just kind of making like the old school fighters used to do, the slight moves that just kind of move your head out there.
That's
like
the type of shit elite fighters do.
Yeah. Well, look at the highlights in the Jacobs fight where, you know, Jacobs threw like 6-7 jabs in a row and Canelo slipped every single one of them and then came and countered him again and stuff like that. Like, you know, that's beautiful work right there. That's what, you know, what PEDs makes boxing ain't gonna art. Do
that. I'll tell you that much.
Say what?
PEDs ain't going to do that.
No.
So, you know, I'll tell you that much. So, you know, you have to respect that he obviously views boxing as a craft and views it as something to master. And
he's always working on it. He's right. Constantly in the gym. He's probably going to be back in the gym within the next couple of weeks, going back to work and stuff like that and tweaking what he, you know. There's always adding new layers and assets to his game. Plus, he plans on fighting again soon enough against what's his name? Caleb Plant, the IBF champ.
And he's already said, and I mean, it's just kind of talk. You know, I think the nature of like medical suspensions and shit like that might not even make it possible. But he said that he wanted to fight at least 3 times this year, and he's sped up his activity quite a bit, but like I said, he can only do so much. If he were able to actually get another fight done this year, that would be pretty amazing. And if he were to make it Caleb Plant, that would be very amazing. And
I don't know how easy that fight's going to be made. And that's what I was talking about before with like the current state of boxing, you know?
You know, I really don't know. I guess
he's a free agent. I mean, Canelo is a free agent, so it's not like he's tied down. I mean, he works with Eddie Hearn, he's working with DAZN, but he's not. I'm not sure. I don't know his contracts or anything, but I don't think he's aligned, you know, with a contract that says he has to appear exclusively on DAZN, right?
Yeah. I'm not, dude, as I've said kind of on the show before, and as I have, said several times elsewhere, I'm generally not like business of boxing is usually not my strong suit, but sometimes I like to kind of pretend it is. No, I mean, I don't really know too much about whether or not they'll be able to pull it off. It sure sounds like Canelo wants the fight, and he historically seems as though he's the kind of fighter where, like, he wants as many belts as possible, or at the very least, perhaps not the belts themselves, but he views it as a situation where the fighters holding the belts are the best fighters, and he wants those fighters. And so, you know, that could just be lip service. It might not mean anything. But also historically, we can fairly comfortably say that when fights make a lot of money, they're a lot easier to get made. You know, when there are hurdles, they're a lot easier to jump when the fight can make a lot of money. And it's pretty safe to say that any fight with Canelo can make a pretty good amount of money. And if they're able to open up stadiums or other venues in order to get live fans there, that at this point that's even more money and even more enticing is perhaps as bad an idea that might be with, you know, COVID cases still kind of fluctuating up and down. But regardless, they're going to view it monetarily. You know, they're going to view it financially and purely on a financial level. Canelo's still a big earner in boxing. And if they're breaking, you know, indoor attendance records and stuff like that in Texas, there's no question. So that might make it easier. On Caleb Plant's end, I have absolutely no idea what the obstacles would be, but I would imagine he'd want the fight. I don't know why he wouldn't.
I mean, it would be a massive fight. It would be the biggest payday of his career, and there's so many other reasons why he should take that fight. But again, this is boxing. He values himself at a different level, as he should, I guess, because, you know, he is an undefeated champion. But I don't know how easy it will, because, you know, PBC and Heyman and stuff, they're going to try to offer him a certain Canelo a certain price, and you know, to come over on their side and put it on Fox. Hearn and DAZN are going to offer another one. It's going to be a back and forth thing. Hopefully it gets made. I just don't know. It's boxing business is really complicated and goofy.
Yeah, and that's actually, well, that
and
is
it's a
good
big point. Headache.
It is, and that is a good point though. And I guess another situation where we could look at it and try to kind of like make sense of it is the Sergey Kovalev Adonis Stevenson situation. If you remember,
I mean, a lot of people remember that.
Well, because
I was hyped because I thought I was going to be going to Canada to work that fight, or hoping to, whenever it was supposed to be made, and obviously it was never made.
Yeah, and it, you know, really unfortunate that it was never made, especially while it was hot and should have been made. But one of the things, you know, it was kind of like it dragged on for like 3 years or something. But one of the things that I remember that Kathy Duva kept saying, it might have been
Nicole it was the Duva. HBO contract, and it
yes.
was at HBO. Yeah.
Exactly. Is that they were basically like, look, like you could say anything you want to say about financially or the split or anything like that, but the bottom line is we have an exclusive contract with HBO, and if they're saying that the fight can't be on HBO, then the fight can't happen.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, then who do you blame for that? I don't know, dude. You figure it out. I'm not going to step into that. You'd be you. You do that. I'm not going to do that. And it's the same kind of thing here. Like, I don't know. What, how are they going to figure out? But yeah, I don't know. I can definitely tell you this. The contract that Canelo had with DAZN was massive, and DAZN probably overplayed their hand in snapping up Canelo and AJ, especially at the same time. And then that's at least in part what caused a lot of the issues with Golden Boy and DAZN and Canelo and, you know, minimum contract guarantees and all this type of shit. So I really don't know what kind of footing Canelo's on with DAZN, but I can definitely tell you that whoever the shareholders are at DAZN, they're going to be like, we want some of that return, buddy. So I don't know, man. It's a really tough.
But also Triple G too. So.
Well, and I guess another element of this, and not to kind of drag it out or to make it overly complicated, but Caleb Plant, you also have to kind of ask on some level, like, who is he in PBC? Is he somebody that the people at PBC are going to really go to bat for? Like, nah, man, this is Caleb Plant we're talking about. We're putting this on Fox or fuck off. Or are they like,
I mean, I don't, nah, yeah, Caleb I wouldn't Plant say that. Needs, I mean, I agree.
You know
with
what
that.
I'm saying?
I,
like, so
yeah,
are they
going to
be like, nah, we kind of need that fight. So maybe we'll do it on DAZN. You know what I mean?
But
so,
then again, who knows? It's the business now, and Plant will probably demand that. But then again, Heyman, it's tough. There's going to be a lot of negotiating, pulling and back and forth. But I mean, I think it'll at least get made before Fury Joshua ever does. So there's that.
Oh,
that's a whole nother story and issue and bullshit.
You know, it's every other day.
We're getting that much closer.
Yeah, it's starting to get very Mayweather-Pacquiao-esque, where it's every other day there's some new, like, thing. And
you know what's sad,
I'm not doing that again.
Is that there's a few fights that are Mayweather-Pacquiao-esque now, not just one. right? At one time, it was just Mayweather Pacquiao. Now there's like a couple of them. There's this, the Titan, you know, Fury Joshua, Spence against Crawford. You know, like.
Yeah, it's pretty absurd, man. And what's even more absurd is that a lot of these fights are like self-evident fights. Like, this is not like weird or like the matchup's not tricky. It's like, dude, this is like the fight to make. Come on, stop bullshitting. So that makes it even more absurd. But
it really is. Instead, we got people demanding that, you know, Spence move up three divisions to fight Canelo instead.
Yeah, I've seen since the Canelo Saunders fight ended, I've seen a handful of at least, you know, a handful of boxing writers, at least I'm presuming, seriously talk about the idea of Errol Spence versus Canelo being a massive fight and the fight to make. And I don't really see that at all. But and on top of that, I don't really
know. Any sane person realizes that, too. Spence is a great fighter. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah. He's no, it has nothing to do with that.
Yeah, he's a badass. You know what I mean? But he got taken to life and death by Sean Porter. All right.
Yeah, what who's that, also a very Sean good Porter, fighter. But,
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But who's talking about fighter. Sean Porter versus Canelo?
He went the distance with Porter. He went the distance, you know, with Mikey. You know, he went the distance with Danny Garcia. Canelo is huge compared to him. You know, it's just, why? You want to see another fucking Kell Brook again?
So like, if we're doing the what's good for the goose is good for the gander thing here, then why wouldn't Sean Porter be mentioned in that conversation since he went so tough with – why wouldn't he – you know, why isn't Canelo Sean Porter? And people – oh, that's ridiculous. Why? You know,
I'm shocked more people haven't called out Sean Porter and be like, well, he beat Usyk as an amateur. I'm sure he could take Canelo.
I was dead wrong about Sean. I don't know. He looked fairly ordinary for a stretch there. Don't get me wrong. Like,
Porter's a badass. I'm
talking about like
tough guy, and he'll fight anybody. Ago. And I hope he gets the Crawford fight.
But in recent years, he's clearly gone to a separate level and has become a top welterweight. And on top of that, man, impeccable dresser, hilarious.
Yeah,
I love Sean
Porter. He's a great guy. But what I mean by saying he went life and death with him, like, Porter is a guy who is a big guy, who was a strong guy for the division. The guy can impose his will. And Spence was obviously at his brink with him. Canelo is three times bigger than Porter. Like, it just doesn't. It just doesn't make sense. Why make that fight when, you know, the best fight in boxing that should be made and refuses to be is right there for him? Instead, you're asking him to fight Canelo? You know, instead of that, Canelo needs to be focusing on either finishing whatever he wants to do in super middleweight, possibly fighting Andrade one day if he wants to, or, you know, moving up to light heavyweight and fighting, Beterbiev.
So, I mean, we got the Margarito thing. We got, you know, the people dropping all the historical references about, well, so-and-so would have done it, and so-and-so would have done it. You know, I mean, I don't know what it is, man, but sometimes these bigger fights just bring out some of the most head-scratching takes for me. I just don't really get it, man. I don't get it.
Twitter gives everybody an outlet, my friend.
Yeah, social media is wild, bro. Social media is definitely wild. But hey,
it was like a joke someone made one time that they said years ago on Twitter, and it was a great one. They were like, I saw a homeless guy ranting and raving on the sidewalk. I wanted to walk up to him and tell him about Twitter.
No shit. That's fucking funny.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, that's about right, though, you know? That's, you know, I was actually going to ask, too. There's been a little bit of discourse in the last day or so about what the impact of the fight was, or, you know, how popular it was or whatever. And so, I mean, I don't really think there's much question. If we're kind of trying to figure out who the biggest stars in boxing are right now, or who the most recognizable names in boxing are, that Canelo is going to be toward the top of the list.
Absolutely.
But there is kind of like a little bit of a question as to exactly what kind of numbers are getting pulled in at DAZN, and stuff like that, because a lot of like the subscription numbers aren't really being released because it's like a private company, all sorts of stuff like that. So it's a little bit more difficult to track compared to like pay-per-view buys usually. And so there's been some discussion about whether or not Canelo's popularity is waning in the last handful of fights or recent years. I mean, personally, I don't really think it is. I think that it's more a reflection of boxing, its popularity, and how much more like spread thin it is in terms of outlets where you can watch boxing. I think that it's more a reflection, whereas before it was like HBO and Showtime and sometimes ESPN. Now you have
Canelo,
a whole bunch of different ones.
I don't think his star is waning or anything like that. It just, he just happens to fight. He can fight anywhere he wants and do whatever he wants, though. He's one of the, when you reach that type of level in boxing, he is. He's like a global crossover star now. He's the star of the sport. He's the best fighter in the sport. And not only that, but like the fact that he can speak English perfectly well when he wants to, makes him even more appealing and more of a crossover. You know, what he did during that in the press conference, cursing Andrade out and while talking before the fight in English and stuff like that. Like, he never really, you know, he's shown a different personality to himself, and he's like really branching himself out there and becoming more of like, you know, a global star everywhere. I can tell you for now, you know, when I'm in the barbershop talking, like, they never talk about boxing. If they do, they're talking about Canelo. Other places, stuff like that, they'll bring him up. If they're, you know, obviously the casual fan will be like, oh, you know, what about that Jake Paul fight? But everybody, even casual people, know who Canelo is. He's just, you know, he's the one that kind of brings everybody in now. He's the attention seeker that all the big stars in Vegas, all the big stars, when, you know, his fight gets announced, they should be there depending on where it's going to be located and stuff like that. Like, he commands that type of attention. So I don't think his star is waning whatsoever. If anything, it's only going to get bigger depending on where he moves with his career from this. But all of his fights now are still still events. Even, you know, his fight against Yidram earlier in the year, which was, you know, a given conclusion and, you know, a complete blowout, but even then, you know, it still got a lot of attention. When he went to MSG and fought Rocky Fielding, that got a lot of attention. Like, Canelo, you know, will always command it now. He's that level of a star, and no one else really is really even close, you know, outside of, like, you know, and Anthony Joshua, obviously, in the UK, and, you know, a few others, but, like, Canelo is that global star of boxing.
Yeah, I don't think that there's I mean, obviously Manny Pacquiao is probably a bigger overall name, but he's not Pacquiao.
I always forget Pacquiao's still active.
but that was going to say, like, he's barely active, though. He's not that active, you know, and I guess it's not really that he doesn't really need to be, but at the same time, you know, he's Canelo, like I said, he seems as though he's kind of ticking his activity upward. And that makes a pretty big difference when you're keeping your name out there and people are able to see you fighting every few months or two, three times a year, whatever, versus once a year tops for Pacquiao, which I get. Trust me. I mean, Pacquiao's been fighting since he was like 15 years old. I mean, the dude probably should be retired by all means at this point. But regardless, I mean, Canelo is obviously a massive star, so I don't know. I mean, it almost seems kind of foolish to sit there and try to figure out exactly what size, you know, what kind of celebrity he is. Like, we should just kind of like be, I guess, fortunate in some way that he's drawing in casual fans, because that's what everybody's always asking for with the views and shit, right?
It's a rare trait, too. It's a very rare trait. Like, how many of these guys today, again, it's the nature of boxing today that, you know, top fighters aren't active. The average amount of times that a top fighter will get in the ring now is maybe twice. And that's what they do. They go in the ring once early in the year, they go in the ring late in the year, and then they dip. And they'll somehow maintain, you know, a top pound-for-pound rating because of that. Where a guy like Canelo is like, you know what, I'm going to fight three times this year. I'm going to fight, you know, two, three times in the past year. And come out of it and just look like a superstar because, well, he's staying active doing something that these, you know, hasn't been seen in a decade or so in terms of activity. Sure, there's been other fighters who have been champions in lower late divisions. Like, for one guy, for instance, who comes to mind is Edgar Sosa. Remember how he had like a dozen defenses or so in a matter of like a year? It looked like a year and a half or something ridiculous. But in terms of top fighters, that's a rarity.
Yeah.
You know, I think Oscar De La Hoya might have been the last big name fighter who fought five times in a year back in the late 90s. So.
Yeah, it. We've talked about it a number of different times on the show, exactly why that is. But, I mean, you know, a big part of it is sponsors dried up. A large part of it is also networks and other entities started pulling out of boxing. The USA Network, for instance, got out of boxing. You know, they were a big boxing supporter. A number of big beer companies pulled their sponsorship. But also
these big fighters
are... Yeah, well, there were fewer outlets, and like we were saying, where it was like HBO and Showtime before, and now there's a big swath of places that are kind of opening up, which is great. But even so, fighters, because of the somewhat like the pay disparity, I guess, or
they get pigeonholed in their own.
Yeah, and on top of that, you know, there just aren't very many opportunities to fight more. It seems so. I mean, it could be needlessly complicated.
Yeah, it's ridiculous now because everybody has their own little playground that they have to stay in, and there's only, like you said, there's only so many dates I can give out to all these different fighters and stuff like that. You know, remember when the PBC first started out and they had like that campaign Free Boxing for All or something. And it seemed like there was a fight every other day on a different channel that no one really knew about or what was going on.
Well, for initially it was ABC, NBC, and CBS, and it was and Fox, and it was like, whoa, damn, okay. But then, of course, you know, most of those major, you know, flagship, the main networks didn't stick with it, somewhat understandably. But yeah, dude, there was Bounce. There was...
Oh, I remember Bounce.
Yeah, like, there was just, like, these strange kind of, like, networks that were just popping up that we were like, what? Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Everywhere. But...
Yeah, it's pretty lame. So that dynamic makes it difficult for fighters to fight fairly often. And it's, whether you like him or not, I would have to say, generally speaking, it's probably good for boxing if Canelo's going to be fighting three times a year. That's a good thing, you know, and it's, I wish there would have been more fighters given opportunities on the undercard, but you also have to take into account that this fight was like kind of thrown together in like about a month or so, which was pretty crazy. I mean, they might have had an idea that that was what they wanted to do after the Callum Smith fight. So, I mean, they maybe knew before a month out, but even so, it wasn't announced till fairly late in the game.
It's becoming a more current theme, it seems.
Well, the pandemic, I think, forced a number of promoters and whatnot to kind of think on their feet. And also, if you're planning a fight fucking 9 months in advance with so many things being up in the air, it's like you can't depend on it. And so I get it. And I'm not really going to be too mad that they didn't have a stronger undercard on this particular card. It would have been nice, though. It would have been nice for more fighters to get showcased. And it also would have been nice if we wouldn't have had to deal with fucking Lawrence Cole, that bastard. Oh my God, Eris.
Like I said, bro, it's almost impressive how bad of a ref he is. He's just over the each, you know, is his dad still in charge of the commission? Is that why he gets booked?
His dad died a couple years ago.
Oh, he did? Okay. Well, I mean, I didn't keep up with these things.
I'm not laughing that he died, despite the fact that he did a lot of very not good things. I'm not laughing that he died. I'm more just laughing at the situation that you didn't know and brought it up in that regard. But it's fine. It's just, most boxing people wouldn't have known. But so the whole reason why
I told someone his dad still runs the commission. Whoops.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing, is that, like, somebody listening in that's like, what? His dad? What does his dad have to do with anything? That's fucked up. Well, Lawrence Cole is a referee in Texas. The Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation is, like, their sports commission. And instead of, like, the New York State Athletic Commission, they have that's their Athletic Commission is the Department of Licensing and Regulation. And Dickie Cole, his dad, was the president of that, or, you know, the head of that commission for a long, long time, since 1980. And then, you know, was doing some funky stuff, was caught like a whole bunch of different times doing just shady shit or stupid shit. And on top of that, Lawrence Cole, the referee himself, is an insurance agent, and it's his company that insures a lot of fight cards in Texas, which is like not necessarily a conflict of interest per se, but could be, and just looks shady. And beyond all of that, Lawrence Cole's like one of the worst referees on the face of the planet.
Oh, you know, just letting you know, you're winning the fight, all right? So you can... If
it's Juan Manuel Marquez. Yeah. Dude, I'm
he got 100... suspended for that, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Okay. But, oh, my God. All right. I have a file on this fool. And when I say I have a file, I mean that I could tomorrow... publish a top 15 times Lawrence Cole fucked up, because there's so many instances where he did some like really gnarly or dumb shit in the ring. Like, he covers up his microphone and walks over to Juan Manuel Marquez and he's like, do you speak English? And Marquez is like looking at him like, he does speak pretty good English, but I think he was looking at him like, what the fuck? And Lawrence Cole's like, so do you speak English? You're head on the fight. And I'm thinking, wait a second. So first of all, you're telling him that, which is crazy in its own right. But second of all, how would you know that? Because the only way you could know that is if you got a peek at the scorecards, which you're not supposed to be doing. And then if you're telling the fighter that, what the fuck are you doing, bro? And then on top of that, if you're an insurance agent... Bro, come on. This doesn't look good. It doesn't look good at all. And then, there are so many instances. Dude, we just saw Omar Figueroa in action the other day. And Omar Figueroa, in the Ricky Burns fight, he was slapping, or was it, Ricky Burns? Yeah, it was, he was slapping Ricky Burns' gloves down, if you remember that. They were in the clinches, and he was slapping his gloves down in the middle of the clinches. Like, as they were fighting, he was slapping his gloves away. And he did the same shit to Chris John against Rocky Juarez. And Chris John ate a hook right as he did that. I mean, dude, like I said, I got a file on this fool. He's bad.
Who would you call the East Coast version of that, Mercanti Jr.?
Oh, man. Yeah. He's got some doozies himself.
Well, and the funny thing is that I noticed something with Mercanti Jr. one time. Obviously, you remember the fight with Cotto and Yuri Foreman.
Oh,
we forced Foreman to go back out there with a busted leg.
His knee's like hanging off the side of his leg and shit. Yeah. Like, come on, champ, come on. Like,
you're going to go out like a champion. But, you know, 20-something years before that, when John Mugabe finally won his world title against Rene Jacquot. I don't want to butcher his name.
Jacquot or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. In that fight, same thing. He suffered a lot. He suffered, I think it was an ankle injury or something, like really busted his leg. Like, he, you know, Mugabe dropped him, but he also, it was kind of like a slip drop, and he dropped. And his leg was, ankle leg, whatever, was badly injured. Like, he had no business to continue. And Mercanti pulled him out, and he was, like, hobbling on one leg, and Mercanti Sr. waved it on to go ahead. And he was on one leg against John the Beast Mugabe, all right?
And, oh, my God.
Well, I shouldn't be laughing because it's not funny, but, I mean, it's the scene of it. If you haven't seen it, it's on YouTube. You can see it for yourself. The man's literally on one leg, and Mugabe just goes and demolish him.
And I'm almost positive it was he who allowed – Ruddock to absolutely, you
obliterate
know,
Greg Pate. Oh, no, Michael Dokes.
Yeah, Dokes, where, like, you know, he loaded up because, like, he's just, like, totally helpless in a corner, like a small weeping babe. And he just, and it's, he does the fucking smash, bro. He loads up with
Yep.
the with that left hooker,
That
like,
left that
uppercut.
left hook uppercut that he had that he called a
Yeah.
smash, yep.
And
Like
Mercanti's just
pow.
standing there. And I'm just like, oh, no. Every time I watch it, I'm just like,
It's
step in,
literally
bro.
like it's not something that was supposed to happen in a pro fight. That would be something you see in a movie.
Yeah,
Like
or a
in a
video game.
when the bad guy, you know, knocks out his best friend or something like that.
Yeah, this the thing that they got to get vengeance for, because it
Yeah,
was evil.
exactly. That's what that
Yeah,
looks like.
because it was evil. Yeah, exactly. It was so bad. Yeah, so I mean, and so to have to endure Lawrence Cole is just like, that's really nonsensical, dude. This guy has been so awful in every single situation. The fact that they would even give him the opportunity speaks to the state of Texas's athletic commission and how it's handled. It's poor. And so
And the and go ahead. Sorry.
but I was just going to say, this is what happens when you get really good site fees for, like, stadiums, or you
Yeah.
have, like, Jerry Jones, who's, like, friends with so and so, or that's just how it goes. That's how it happens.
Exactly, but also too, I wanted to touch on the acting job on the first fight of the card with Nagi Aguilera.
Oh man, yeah, that was pretty bunk. I mean, that
I mean, to
was.
say the least, man. Jesus Christ. Like, when he went, because I wasn't really paying attention to the fight. So I think I was in my bedroom or something when I heard on the TV, like, you know, him freaking out and they were making a commotion. So I came back and I saw him on the canvas. So I was like, oh, you know, what happened? And then when I saw him, he barely got even touched. And I'm just kind of like, you serious?
Yeah, dude, he like just about any time when somebody gets fouled and it's like their own fault, you know, like they turn their head and they get hit in the back of the head or something like that. He didn't even really get hit in the back of the head is the thing.
No,
He
he
got
didn't. He got glanced.
hit in like the deltoid. Like he didn't even like, you know, he got hit like in that little when you like flex your neck and your little shoulders go up. He got hit in that part. And it wasn't even that hard. I mean, man, you know, I
And
don't
then he was
really.
there throwing a conniption fit on the canvas. Man, fuck this.
Yeah.
This is bullshit. Yeah, this is a real fight. Hit me in the back of the head. Aren't you going to do something about this? You know,
Yeah,
the
that's
real fake out artists like Luis Santana and Juan Koji at least played unconscious while they were faking it, all right?
I mean, it's just I don't like to get on
Guarantee if
fighters
Santana
and
was
like,
watching on
you
television,
know.
he was shaking his head and saying that's not the way to do it.
I mean, when a lot of boxing fans are like quick to call fighters pussies and stuff like that, and to me that's pretty dumb. You know, I'm not interested in that. However, one thing that I cannot stand is foul faking, dude. Like faking fouls to win, or like
No, it's
trying to
awful.
fake, you know, trying to fake a foul to get out of some, you know, I hate it. And that's one of the reasons why I started really disliking Bernard Hopkins late in his career, was that he would just do that. He'd start doing that shit against everybody. You know, he'd start holding the back of his head when it was like wasn't even anywhere near his, you know, that type of shit is just, I hate it, dude. I just really hate it. So I mean,
Hopkins.
whatever. He didn't get away with it. Like nobody gave a shit about Nagy Aguilera like doing
Yeah.
it, but it just looks so lame, dude.
Oh, that's bad. Do you remember that
I
time when
trash
Hopkins?
soccer. I trash soccer all the time because it's like,
Oh, one of those guys who did that shit. Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
it's
One of
like,
the fakers.
you know, just about every time I watch that shit, I'm just like, this is the most low level acting, you know, but yeah, it's bad.
So when I, the one time I've ever been to a hockey match, a hockey game, was at MSG when the Rangers were playing some point in 2019.
Yeah, okay. You there?
Got over. It wasn't even a hard check because it wasn't something that, like, I was close enough to the ice that I would have heard it. And the dude got hit into the thing, into the side panel, and then dropped like he was shot, and just laid there, and he was playing it off. And then the minute the guy went into the penalty box, he got up and like nothing happened. And I got really pissed about that because I thought they should have fought over that. Instead, the guy played dumb.
Oh jeez, dude. Well, and on top of that, hockey is another sport where it's like, you know, you are not, you're definitely not encouraged to fake fouls, you know, like, I mean, no. You're encouraged to fucking fight, you know what I'm saying? Like, somebody fouls you, like, let's go. So it's just not a good look, dude. You know, it's, yeah, that shit didn't look good for Nagy Aguilera at all. I mean, but it's not like he was expected to go in there and win. It's not even like he was expected to go in there and look good. So, whatever.
And anytime anyone brings up Bernard Hopkins and, you know, his fake fouling type thing, I still think back to his rematch with Antoine Eccles, which for whatever reason will always be hysterical to me, is when Hopkins gets body slammed. I mean, that was a legitimate slam. But what makes it hysterical is Eccles immediately goes over to the camera and starts going, Bernard is faking, Bernard's a wimp, Bernard, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then they cut away from him.
Well, and that's what's so crazy is that how many times in that guy's career, how many fights just like ended weirdly or had some crazy thing. I was at that first Chad Dawson fight, dude, and I remember just watching that and just being like, "What in the fuck?" And the only good thing on that card was Antonio DeMarco and his win over
Linares.
Yeah, Linares. Yeah. That was a fun fight, but that was bad. And then you have the Eccles fight, and then you have, what was it, the
first fight with Robert?
Either the first or second Robert Allen fight where Mills Lane pushed him out of the ring, and he actually legitimately wound up with like a torn, like something, ankle, something or other. And everybody's like, "Oh, he's faking." So the only time
he got flung, man. Mills put some heat on that shove.
The only time, yeah, Mills, former referee, former prosecutor, DA, and shit. Yeah, he, you know, the only times where he was like legitimately hurt, people are like, "Ah, he's faking," and then he's like spending the latter half of his career just faking it. I'm like, "Oh, dude, come on, Bernard, killing me here, bro." Just killing me. Now, you know, honestly, I thought the Canelo Saunders fight was it was a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be. Obviously, not for BJ Saunders. But, I mean, hey, before we go, though, dude, I do want to ask. So we talked a little bit earlier. I mean, we kind of touched on this. We did kind of cover it, but with this, the conversation about quitting and stuff like that, and like the conversation about, you know, like where BJ goes from here, and like, what's your personal view on, like, I think it's pretty tough to argue that BJ Saunders is like a good dude, you know, like he's been caught doing so many bad things. You know, he's been caught doing so many bad things. And so then I guess the question would be like, do you feel as though kind of like justice was served, or that like karma's kind of like, you know, like leveled up here? Like, are we all good? Or, you know, did BJ kind of like get done wrong? You know, like
Done wrong. I'm definitely not going to say he got done wrong. And to be honest, I wouldn't say that for any fighter, because this is boxing. This is what you sign up for. You know, injuries are going to happen, sometimes severe like this one. So I'll never say that he got done wrong. It's literally, this is what happens. This is what happens in the territory. If, you know, if a favorite fighter of mine got his face smashed in, well, this is what happens in boxing. You know what I mean? So I'm definitely, I mean, well, he got done wrong. I don't think that, like, in terms of him suffering his comeuppance and stuff like that, he did say a lot of stuff early before. Like, you know, he's made a lot of talks about, you know, disparaging women, other fighters. He's obviously a disrespectful asshole in interviews to many people. His kid is really disrespectful. He's just not overall a very, you know, a personality that's just not a joy. This is not a good person. He's really not. So a lot of people, I'm sure, you know, felt that he suffered his comeuppance in this fight, which he did, you know. That being said, I hope that this injury doesn't, you know, affect him permanently. You know what I mean? That one day he'll be able to continue on his career, but I don't feel bad for what the injury that he suffered, because I don't really know if I'd feel bad for any type of like facial injury like that, unless, you know, they were like permanently like done for it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those things, like, you sign up, you know, in boxing, you're not even be like, I'm not gonna be like, oh yeah, this is really bad, I'm gonna pray for Billy Joe Saunders. Nah. You know, especially other two, because, like, he was saying stuff early before the fight. He mentioned, oh, you know, I would always go on my shield, that other guys shouldn't quit like that. And so, who was it, Daniel Dubois that he was talking about?
Yeah.
And after that fight, Dubois, I think, came out with a comment saying, I wish Billy Joe all the best and hope he recovers well. That's how you know, that was a classy response. That was nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope Saunders is able to recover and, you know, eventually come back when he's 100% healed, if he's ever going to be 100% healed. But, you know, who knows from there. But I'm not going to be able to, I'm not going to sit there and be like, until, you know, and like have a celebration like other people's do and stuff like that. He just, you know, he got what was coming to him eventually, though. Like, I don't know if this was the exact ending I was looking for. You know, either way, I was just hoping he was going to lose some, you know, some form. But I'm sure a lot of people, you know, justice was due. I'm just not going to sit there and hope that, you know, this is like a career-ending injury or anything like that. I'm just, you know, it's unfortunate what happened to him. But then again, this is the name of the game. This is boxing, and people do suffer injuries of this type of nature. And all you can do is just hope that eventually he can come back from it.
I think you're spot on, dude. I think that there's room. Like, you know, you can say he's a bad dude and he deserves something for being a bad dude. But what he deserves, he got. Like, he got it. Like, okay, like, then we're good. You don't need to wish or demand that he go further. And you can say, I hope he's okay. I hope he does not lose his eyesight. But you can also say, he entered into that knowing that that was possible, that that could happen. I mean, yeah, all of these things can exist in the same reality, you know, it's okay. And so that's a big issue, not just with boxing fans, but people that they're so binary, so black and white, like, oh, well, it's either that he's a fucking pussy or he's a hero for getting in there. And it's like, well, you know, whatever, you know, it's complicated. It's not like that.
And you'd rather not a person, you know, be permanently. He has a family to go home to. Even, you know, is whatever you think about him, he still has a wife. He still has kids. He has people, that immediate family, that love him and want to take him in, and they don't want to see him deformed, disfigured. Like, I was ringside, you know, I think I mentioned this before, for the Magnamed fight against Mike Perez years ago, and look what happened to him. You know, like, you don't. When people get injured and stuff like that, you hope that it's not going to be something that they can't recover from. That's the end of the game. You know, like, people suffer broken hands or the, you know, ribs and everything like that. That comes with the territory, but you know they're going to be able to recover. You know, an eye injury, as severe as it is, there's still a chance to recover. But, like, you know, a brain injury is something you can't come back from. And then you have all these people out there who have never probably been in a fist fight in their life. Oh, I would have survived that. I would have done this. I would have done that. No, you wouldn't have. Not a fucking chance. All right, I when I was a kid in the sparring session one time, I got jabbed in the nose and I felt something crack and I freaked out from it. It was the worst pain I ever felt in my life. You know, I can't imagine how I felt when it's being shattered. So, you know, again, like, he lost the fight. A lot of, you know, he was basically shut up for everything that he was talked to, but I hope he's not permanently injured from anything like this, because that's a really serious injury and something that's really going to be difficult to recover from.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the guy, I want him to be able to use his hands to be able to speak and communicate.
Yeah.
Think clearly. You know, I don't wish those kinds of things on fighters.
That's, and I'm sure, crazy. He will be back eventually one day. To be honest, a guy like him, I don't know if he can just go out like that. It's going to take a while, and I don't expect him to be back maybe even in a year or so. But, you know, a guy like Saunders, I can see him coming back eventually.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I don't know that this is necessarily the end of his career or anything like that, but he should take some time for sure. It's a pretty severe.
How long
injury.
Was Brooke out before he came back?
I don't know, that wasn't even
the same eye that got broken, and then his other guy get broken after that.
I think he's had injuries to both eyes or something.
Yeah, man, Jesus.
Yeah, man. And then he got stabbed in the leg in Tenerife. No, I'm not bringing that.
Yeah, that's just bad juju, man.
Woof. Nah, I mean, look, it's I wish Billy Joe Saunders the best. You know, I hope that I, you know what, I hope he's learned something, I guess. I mean, it's better, I think, to say, I hope he learned something, and I hope that he's been humbled or whatever, and I hope that he feels more humility or more empathy toward other people or something like that, than to say,
he got what he deserved, fuck him.
You know, it's, yeah, I hope he learned. I hope he learned, and I hope he is able to pass off that lesson to his kid who punches other fighters in the wang during weigh-ins, because that shit was fun.
Apparently he's an amateur boxer himself, so, you know, maybe
I heard about come that. Up. No, I mean, it was a good fight. Yeah. It was a pretty entertaining fight, and
it was a great atmosphere. It was high. Everybody was, you know, had high energy. Twitter was lit that night. The entrances were great. Kudos to Hearn for putting on a big event and making it seem like it was like, you know, a type of like rock star concert that usually you only see in Europe. He's bringing that feeling to America, which was sadly lacking for a number of years.
You know what? You and I were talking about that the other night, man. I love that kind of the walkouts, the pageantry, the song.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You know,
Canelo's ring walk was amazing. You know, even Saunders in his way was good, you know.
Yeah, I love that shit. You know, just the kind of doing it big. Like, I love it. And
it's a big event. Kind of it should have that type of feel. Absolutely.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it was good. And so I really appreciate, you know, kind of... This is cliche, and it's almost like getting really annoying to hear at this point, but like, you know, the return to normal type of thing. It is nice to have the diversion to make it feel kind of like, oh, this was just another fight, a normal fight. And that was pretty cool. So,
had the fights in the audience. You saw the video of Saunders' dad, unfortunately, getting shoved by that crazy security. That was bad on both ends. I'm not even going to.
Yeah.
Security guard got a little too reckless there, because they do go on power trips sometimes, and his
he
dad
probably shouldn't
have
tried to storm the ring. But the security guard
his
probably,
dad
also
probably
need to chill
like
the fuck
you
out.
Know tried to explain himself before he went rushing over there like that. But
he probably shouldn't have tried to storm the ring. But the security guard also needs to like chill the fuck out. Dude needs to.
Yeah, those guys get way too overexcited at fights. It's funny.
Yeah, man, you're not a cowboy, buddy. Just chill. No, it was good stuff, dude. And so I'm happy that they were able to kind of pull it off. And hey, man,
we're getting better, man. Only upwards from now. Hopefully, if you know the vaccine and other stuff goes through and more things get opened up and everything like that, we'll hopefully be back on track to be able to attend fights pretty soon.
Indeed, you know, it's only inching toward that way, and hopefully the sooner the better. But in any event, dude, it was a good little chat. I'm happy we were able to kind of get it out. Look, people are still talking about it, man. You know, whatever you feel about Canelo, people are still talking about the fights and still arguing everything. And I take that as a good sign.
Absolutely. That's huge.
The chatter's good. I appreciate it, man. Thank you. Everybody, thanks so much for listening in. We appreciate you listening in. And in the meanwhile, while you're waiting for new shows to drop, if you're on social media, like Twitter, for instance, follow Aris Pina there at Punch Zone Aris, A-R-I-S. Follow me, Patrick Connor, at Patrick M. Connor. There's also a Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio page on Facebook if you want to hit the like button there. But also on whatever apps, the podcast apps and all those kinds of things, however you listen to the show, if you wouldn't mind giving us a rating, that's also very much appreciated. Kind of bumps us up a little bit, because hey, we have a pretty high rating actually through, you know, a number of podcasts. I noticed only had like a handful of ratings, and we have like 75, 80, 85 or something like that, and we're still at 5 stars. So I dig it, but it would be cool to have even more. But in the meanwhile, we appreciate it very much so. And Aris, we'll be
always
back.
Always a blast, my friend.
Indeed. Sure. Thanks so much.
Have a good one.
All right, man. Take it easy, everybody.